Welcome back, and thank you for listening to episode 285 of the Level Change Podcast. I'm Steffi Haynes, and I'm joined, as always, by my amazing co-host, Victor Rodriguez. Today, we're going to talk about stuff. What do you think of that, Victor?
That sounds okay to me. Sure, let's do that.
And once again, we're not picking this weekend's fight card because guess what? It's terrible. Terrible. Oh. There's like three fights on it in total that I'm mildly interested in. Outside of that, forget it. And there are so many contender series people on here, like people coming straight from the contender series. I think there's like four or five debuts on this card. It's absolutely awful. But y'all are in luck because you know what? I've decided that even though it's not free episode day, it's free episode day. I'm going to give this one away to y'all for free.
Yay.
And along with that free episode, y'all are getting some sumo stomping with Tim Bissell. So, y'all are going to have a good show today. First things first, let's look at some headlines. And there are a few, like breaking news today, like an hour ago. Bellator struck a deal with Warner Brothers Discovery and will now air its events on Max. And for those of you going, what the fuck is Max? Well, Max used to be HBO Max, which used to be HBO. So HBO and their divine wisdom decided to drop the part that lets you know, hey, this is on a channel I recognize. Only now you're looking at Max and you're saying, hey, what the hell is this channel? I don't recognize it. But here we are. So Bellator has a deal to be airing on Max, another premium paid platform. I don't think that this is a good move, but it's seeming like the only move.
Well, I don't know if it's the only move, by which I mean it could have been, they could have gone with some other lower,
that's what I mean,
lower ranked, you know, they could have gone with some other, maybe they could have stuck with, they've already got DAZN for international distribution. Maybe they would have gone with Triller. Maybe they would have gone with, oh shit, I don't know, Kick or Rumble or something like that. They could have been nestled right next to Power Slap and boosted their numbers. You see, could have been great if they'd done that. That's not what they did though. Nah, they did something different. Now you can be a true person of culture and of the moment, and you can follow up your viewings of 90 Day Fiancé with Bellator. So yeah, that can work.
Also, you can feel like you're an elite company, like you're rubbing elbows with the UFC fans that have to pay for their content through ESPN Plus. Mm-hmm. Now you get to pay for your content by having a Max subscription, because guess what? You don't get to watch any of those Bellator cards unless you're paying for Max. Yeah. So there's
You used to have to pay for Showtime, now Paramount. But since they decided to get out of the business of anything that has to do with sports now, that's not going to be a possibility. I'll tell you what, though. The one thing I've been thinking about since I read the announcement, and I don't know if this has occurred to anybody else, is HBO, after this, going to, in any capacity, try to make their way back into boxing?
I doubt it.
But, I mean, it's interesting.
I doubt
it. Isn't it? It might not. Maybe they won't. But hey, you know, I don't think it's a bad idea to reconsider.
Well, here's the thing. The reason why boxing is no longer on Showtime or HBO or any of the major broadcast companies like ABC, Fox, any of that, is because there's no money in it for them, because the Ali Act prohibits people from doing what the UFC does by just cropping out the lion's share of the revenue and the profit for themselves. See, boxing doesn't do that. And because there are much more equitable splits among the boxers and everything else, the broadcast partners don't get to make a whole heck of a lot of money unless they are charging for a fee, a subscription service fee. Like DAZN right now is going up again. I think it's going to be like $24.99 a month.
Oh, God. What?
Yeah.
That much?
I mean, it's insane. And DAZN came out with the subscription model saying, hey, you tired of paying for pay-per-view? Subscribe to us. We're going to kill pay-per-view. And then 3 years later, guess what DAZN did? They switched and now they offer pay-per-views on top of their $24.99 a month.
Yeah. See,
but boxing is so much different, though. MMA is cheap content for anyone to grab up. All these people that are like, oh, one is on Amazon, they must have a killer deal. No, they do not. Mm-mm. It is cheap content, the cheapest sports content out there. And when you're looking at a Bellator, of all things, that has basically crumbled up and died and been folded into PFL, and they're just operating as this right now, I doubt that in 2 years we'll even have a Bellator name to think about. It'll probably all be folded into PFL or completely undone. But the point is, a Bellator on any other platform, this is the best they could do by far. Otherwise, you end up with them on a platform that Victor named, a Kick, a Rumble, a Thriller. Oh my God. Those are all awful.
It's a good move because it's a network that people recognize and understand, a streaming service that a lot of people already have.
Maybe they recognize it now. Maybe they don't, since it's not HBO anymore. It's fucking Max.
But people know. I mean, that's a Zaslav brand fumble, you know, but I mean, it's not like people know that it's the HBO thing. Even though it's not called HBO, it's the artist formerly known as HBO, whatever the fuck. Mm-hmm. You can do that. We can skate off that. But either way, like the fact that it's there with all this other programming that people enjoy, with, you know, that whole thing with the Warner connection, and you can probably get some commercials during TNT broadcast for, say, AEW, or you could get that for, you know, in any of these other premiere movies that they have or any of these other shows, they could certainly do something to help promote that. Problem is, how much longer is Bellator actually going to be out there? That's the other thing. I mean, they're going to eventually fold with the PFL, as you mentioned, or at least it seems that way. I don't think that they're going to be keeping this as some sort of extension or some sort of a auxiliary thing. They're not going to keep this as a secondary thing for way longer than most people think. I'm frankly not sure why they haven't accelerated the process and done it already. They don't have any commitments with broadcast partners, or they didn't, at least until now. They could have rushed it, but they chose not to. So they're keeping it separate for reasons that I still don't understand as of yet. I'm waiting to find out more. But if that's what's going to happen, this is a really good place for them to land. It's way better than going to Prime, because, my God, I know PBC is apparently going to Prime.
But that's different.
That's a different.
Yeah, that's an entire promotion.
Yes.
And it's a huge stable. PBC, they've got a lot of good fighters there.
Yeah, and one, well, I mean, listen, this didn't make it into any of the writing that I'd done previously regarding one. A source had told me, someone who had intimate knowledge of how they were dealing with international distribution, and this is something that happened years ago, okay? They were dealing with a partner from a specific country, and this was like just a few weeks before one of their larger events. And they're in a car, they're in a limo, I believe it was, and the people from this broadcaster said they offered one. You know how much they offered them for this event?
Hmm.
For the TV rights? $4,000. $4,000 for an international event with international fighters. This is the caliber of negotiation that these guys are. So when you see, you know, one championship is on Amazon Prime, don't be too impressed. Yeah. Trust me. There's, you know, Rob Schneider is probably making content out of his own pocket and putting it on Prime like he did with Netflix. Like it's there's a lot of dog shit that they can get for absolute cheap receipts. And that's fine. That's just, you know, just don't be blinded by that. The fact that it's not on you know, the fact that they went with the Bellator and HBO, or the Time Warner Max gotten into this with Bellator, is a very reassuring sign that they're dealing with serious people, serious money. There's a level of professionalism here, and I respect that.
The first card is scheduled to kick off this Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern time on Max. And there is a silver lining here, because the entire Bellator library is included in this deal. So Max will have the entire Bellator library.
Oh, I missed that part because yeah. I didn't see the last card in its entirety.
Yeah.
So this is, that's choice right there.
Yeah. So there is some good parts to this. It's just my thing is always going with a partner that is subscription-based is always, in my eyes, sort of a strike, because it limits how many people are actually going to pay to watch, especially. Now, if this were UFC, you know, I would be like, okay. But this isn't UFC. This is Bellator.
Yeah, they're not... You know, they're not working with pay-per-view models.
Right.
They got a lower overhead. They generally have been a much more modest organization in that respect. This is, I mean, you're telling me I can go back and watch Rebney era Bellator?
Yeah. The entire library.
Nice. I love it.
Indeed. So out of the frying pan into the fire, we're going to talk Sean Strickland a little bit.
Oh, my fucking God.
I had a problem yesterday seeing this guy's video where he whines and complains about how he doesn't feel normal, how he doesn't feel like he can interact with society properly, that he knows he's mentally unwell. You know what he did? He trauma dumped on everybody, and then he paints it in this lovely canvas that's wrapped up in the I'm just like you narrative.
Mm-hmm.
But for all those people that think it seems so genuine, if it seems so genuine, why is he releasing it on his social media, the ones that earn him money?
Well... because he's an incredibly inconsistent person in some respects. And by that, I mean that it's all about, you know, be kind to me, but let me be as abrasive as I want towards everybody else. And I'm going to remind us all of the incident that he had with Machine Gun Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, people are too sensitive. People get upset over words. People have all these other things going on. They're weak, but I'm big, strong man. I'm not like them. And then he goes up to Machine Gun Kelly. He talks a little bit of smack. He disrespects him to his face. And then he gets mad that he gets looked at the wrong way.
Uh-huh.
Not spoken to, but looked at. And we harped on this a lot last time when it actually happened. But I need to put a greater level of emphasis to remind you all of what exactly happened and why. Again, I am entitled. I can do whatever I want. But you? No. Everybody else has to. It's that. That's the problem that I have. And that's the problem that's continuing to happen. And frankly, I'm bored. I'm just fucking tired. Buddy, go see a therapist. Go talk to somebody. What are you doing talking in your car? You know who does that? The henpecked fat fuck husband who's got nothing else going on, who thinks he's an authority figure, but he has no control over everything in his life. And this is where he gets to project what a big, strong, manly man he is. Sean Strickland is a big, strong, manly man. The problem is he needs some guidance. All right. He might not admit it, but it seems like
He admits it. I mean, the last thing he said was, I don't feel mentally well. And why are you trauma dumping here instead of going to a therapist? Get your ass in therapy. And then, you know, he says, you know, I told my girlfriend, sometimes I feel like I just want to burn everything down. And I'm thinking, what kind of girl is she? You know, she's got to have the mental fortitude of a giant to be able to fucking...
Very patient.
Be able to listen to this fool whine and complain and perform. Listen, this guy is performative. If you look at his YouTube, at any of his social media, go back a few months and look at the trend. It is always him first giving advice, then saying how much he loves the fans because I'm just like you. We're together. I care about you. I feel connected to you, blah, blah, blah. It's always that. And then wrapped up inside of that is his core idea of the day, of that video. And it's always something fucking hateful.
You know, I'm starting, I've suspected for a while that he's just one of those cats who didn't really have too many people listen to him or pay much attention to him. And now that he's getting all this attention, he's not sure how to process it. And he's mistaking this adulation from fans and from strangers on the internet as something to aspire to. And I don't know that that's really the way it ought to be. Like, these people are not your friends, bro. These people, you know, they've turned on everybody else. They'll turn on you.
Yeah.
Not only that, but this isn't healthy. This isn't good. This isn't right. You know, you don't put all your business out on Front Street. That's just not, you know, you don't put all your inadequacies and everything out there. And I do say this as someone who applauds and is in favor of men showing a greater level of vulnerability. I think we're a little too closed off in that. We're taught this whole, oh, you don't talk about your feelings, men don't cry, all this other shit. You know what ends up happening when you don't? You turn into Sean Strickland. You turn into a guy who says all these things, but then crashes and is emotionally unstable. And you need to be able to have outlets. You need to be able to let this stuff out. Now, you don't want to be like Glenn Beck doing all the fake crying and all this other shit that's performative. No, you don't want that. But you need to have a balance. This right here is not balance. What's going on with this guy, man? You just worry more and more. Okay, is he going to do something horrible one of these days? Is he just going to snap? And because he's mentioned this sort of thing, he's expressed a desire for this to happen.
I don't believe in that. Nah,
I hope not.
I'm the exact opposite. I think it's all performative. I mean, there's a trend in his videos and all of his social media. And he knows when he's overstepped too, because he immediately backs up, regroups, and then puts out another video saying, you know, I think I might have jumped the gun, blah, 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 whatever. But the point is that it's performative. All this bullshit about I just want to kill somebody. He's talking shit. From all accounts, from the people around him, he's supposedly a really nice guy and blah, blah, blah. It's his public persona and this, that, and the other. He performs. I even think that his crying session with Theo Von was a little performative. I don't think that it was 100% fake, but I think that it started organically and he saw Theo Von react the way he did, so he poured it on more. Theo Von would ask him, do you need me to take a minute? No, I'm fine. And he would continue, but he made sure that Theo Von let him keep going and pouring it on more and more. Just go through any, see, I spent a little time going through his social media to make sure that I wasn't improperly attributing this to him. But the more videos you look at of his stuff, the more you see a pattern. And his pattern is performative. 100%. Plain and simple. And I do believe that he has childhood trauma. I will give him the benefit of the doubt there. I do believe that he probably has a lot of unresolved trauma as well that he has just not gotten right with in his head. But I don't think it's as bad as he portrays. I think that by virtue of him being an MMA fighter, he feels that he is a violent being to begin with. And he has to pour onto that and make it more than it actually is. I mean, his sparring sessions are a cardinal indicator. He loves going full tilt in sparring, no headgear, nothing but gloves. And he likes to beat somebody up against the ropes. But have you noticed that there are often people that are probably a little beneath him in standing in the gym or whatever? Also, his message when he beat up Sneeko. Sneeko will probably be a better man for that ass whipping.
Yeah, yeah.
Why is Sean Strickland not a better man for the ass whipping he got from Dricus du Plessis? No matter how razor close it was, he lost. Why is he not a better man for it? Why does that only apply to whoever he happens to rough up in the gym? You see where I'm going with this? It's always something with Sean. And he could turn this thing around. He really could. But he doesn't want to because he likes all that right-wing adulation that he's getting. What cracks me up is that 6 months ago, he was talking shit about Donald Trump. But the minute Donald Trump set his gaze upon Sean Strickland, that was it. Sean Strickland is pro-Trump now.
But that's kind of how a lot of these work, you know? That's how a lot of these guys...
And that's my point.
Yeah. You know, a lot of it's like, oh, yeah, oh, you like me. Well, I like you too, sir. Yes, good job. You're like, all right, okay. I get it. I still... Like, I got to disagree with you on the whole performative thing. I don't know. I don't really think it's to that degree.
I do. I must reiterate. I don't think it's 100%, but it's getting there. He's getting close to it. I mean, it's to the point now where I don't trust a thing he says. If he says, I went out and planted flowers for my next door neighbor who's 95 years old, I would require video. If he pointed up and said, the sky is blue today, if I didn't fucking see the sky, I would not trust him.
Well, I mean, I get it. it's hard because what do you make of someone who has this? I don't know many people like this. I really don't.
Neither
I mean, who
do
does?
I mean,
it's really hard to make anything out of this. It's like, you know, what's going to happen next? And, you know, why is he doing it? But I just keep circling around the same thing. Stop fucking talking on the internet. Stop it. Ryan Garcia is another bag. Now that guy.
Yeah.
I'm glad that the Nevada Commission is finally making sure that this guy gets some kind of mental evaluation. And if that means that he doesn't get to fight Haney, I am okay with that.
Yeah.
I am fine with that.
This is not the first time that he's had problems. Like, you wouldn't know this, but a year and a half, 2 years ago, he stepped away from boxing for almost a year to get his head right. He stepped away, and his reasoning was because he had mental health problems that he wanted to address. That was his words. When he came back at the beginning of last year, maybe the end of the 2022, whatever it was, he gave an interview where he talked about having suicidal thoughts. Mm-hmm. So for this kind of behavior that Ryan is exhibiting, for any commission to not investigate is, you know, terribad. I mean, the onus is on them to make sure that he's okay, and they should. But Sean, I don't put him in that category whatsoever. Sean is very media savvy. And I never thought I would find myself saying this, but he knows what his people want. And he gives it to them on the regular. And he dresses it up as, I am just like you. And that is why his fan base just keeps growing. And he also wants to know why he doesn't get a rematch. That is Izzy got knocked out by Pajeda and he got an immediate rematch. Why don't I get one? Well, Sean, look at your goddamn behavior. They can't let you out in public anymore.
No, not just that. That fight with Drickus.
I know.
It was not good.
But I feel like they might be, you know, hey,
I think it's got more to do with the fact that that fight probably didn't sell all that great and definitely sucked. No, I think it's got more to do with that than anything else.
Not me. No. I mean, obviously that's a large part of it. But for me, I feel like Dana's comments about Sean not being, you can't let him around people, blah, blah, blah. I think that carries a lot of weight. Do they want him as champion again with all of those eyes on him and he's a loose cannon who never knows when to shut his fucking mouth?
I don't think they care.
I do.
They wouldn't have put him in the position to fight for a title in the first place, even if they were banking
on Izzy
knocking him out.
First of all, he was not this bad. He got immensely worse after the belt was around his waist. I don't think they anticipated how bad he was going to get.
Well, they couldn't have expected him to get better. I mean, it's not like he had a trajectory that was getting showing any signs of improvement.
I don't think that they expect anything when they book these fights at all. What I think is that they see what happens in the aftermath. And what happened in the aftermath of Sean Strickland getting that belt was him going ham every time he was out. Every interview, everywhere he went, they could not take him anywhere. And so I think that has some part in this. But as you said, you know, the larger part is about the pay-per-view buys. But I definitely think to some degree, they don't want Sean in that public a position again, at least for a little while until he dials it down. I just can't imagine that they would. It's just, I cannot imagine being a PR person that would be assigned to handle him. I know they don't have one, but man, he needs one.
I just don't know that they give a fuck. I really don't. They've shown no restraint whatsoever. They've shown no capacity or really, frankly, any desire to rein any of these guys in. So I'm not really sure that that's something that needs to be factored into this, right?
Let me ask you something. Yeah. What's going to happen when Sean's audience dries up because they're tired of the same old shtick? You know what Sean's going to do? He's going to step it up a notch. So the next time he runs into a Machine Gun Kelly type, who's to say he doesn't push him?
I don't know. I mean, they'll probably
do
like they did.
Why do you not know? Why do you not know? What did we watch him do to Sneeko? And how did that Sneeko thing start? Because he was talking shit and Sneeko actually stepped up to the plate. But if Sean's not getting the prerequisite attention he thinks he needs and wants to step it up, a push, I think he would do a push. I'm not saying he would all out start a fight, but a push could definitely happen. Connor got away with it. Connor threw a fucking drink on him. Why would you think that they would not, that couldn't happen or wouldn't happen? It happens all the time.
I think he loses another few. They'll do like they did Mike Perry. They'll offload him like flotsam, and then they'll just keep him moving. They'll rid themselves of him, and that's that. That's the only way they handle things.
Yeah, they'll use him up, but don't think that he wouldn't push somebody, because he absolutely would.
Yeah, but I mean, again, they're not really, you know, look, Cedric Dumas got signed with cases pending.
That's a different scenario because Cedric Dumas wasn't in the UFC when all of this happened.
And they've done nothing since, right? Jamahal Hill, he had that case against him not too long ago. Has that been addressed?
But again, these are people in their own circles. They're not Machine Gun Kellys. They're not stars that could sue. You know, the only thing that saved Sean Strickland's ass that night from having a full-scale, you know, bodyguards pinning him to the wall and shit like that was because Machine Gun Kelly is repped by Endeavor, WME. He was there. Do you think he just likes going to power slap?
Well, he certainly loves going to UFC events. Him and Travis Barker, like every single one. So them being repped means they're going to be there front row.
They're both repped and they are probably doing favors. And he's not at every UFC event. He's at a handful of them.
Well, the big ones. I mean, most of them, the ones that are in Vegas, he's there a lot. He's been to a bunch of Apex shows. Him and Travis, actually.
Yeah, but, well, I wouldn't say a bunch either. It's been a handful. But my point is that he strikes out against somebody like that, you know, there might be a problem. What happens if he runs into the wrong person on the street, a litigant, you know?
No, he's on his own.
But if he's repping the UFC as a champion... I think that the UFC does factor in a loose cannon like Sean. I do.
I think they'll probably, you know, if they were serious about that, they'd include some kind of verbiage in their contracts. And I don't think they are. And I don't think they will.
Why would you put verbiage in your contracts when it's only basically about one guy?
because you can stop other guys in the future from fucking around and being all aggressive like that. You know what I mean?
And as far as
you put in a good boy clause.
Yeah. As far as I've seen, I haven't. They do have a code of conduct still in there.
Oh, do they?
They do. Yep. They sure do. There is still a code of conduct. Yeah. So that might actually be covered there, but I would have to go back and reread. But there is some code of conduct stuff in there. Yeah, funny, well, right?
The last guy who was known for being the guy who enforced the code of conduct was a guy who ended up catching a domestic violence case himself. So I don't know, man. I mean, you tell me.
Right.
You tell me.
So enough talk about Sean Strickland. Let's talk about Matt Brown, a guy that I really like. He has a podcast and he says some really insightful things. And this week, his insightful idea of the week is, man, it hits so hard when it's, considering we just talked about how terrible this UFC card is and how many are coming straight from Contender Series to debut on this card. Matt Brown says the barrier of entry to the UFC is so much lower these days, and he is fucking right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here, let me read what he said. It's not like I necessarily don't have respect for the guys today, but the barrier of entry is so much lower now. When I was coming up, the UFC was a dream. It was the Super Bowl. You get to the UFC, you're the fucking man. Now, it's not that it's small. It's not a small feat. But if you're an athlete and you get into MMA and you train hard, you're going to have a good chance at the UFC. When I was coming up, the chance to get into the UFC was a huge thing. Now it's like everybody gets the chance. I cannot disagree with him.
No, we've all seen the bar for entry be far lower. I mean, that's just what it is. Are you ready? Can you make weight on short notice? Congratulations. You got a higher chance of getting in than the guys who were coming in 10 years ago. We need somebody to come in. Hey, we need a Ron Stallings to come in short notice. We need a Pat Cummins to come in short notice. And those guys came in and they made a meal of it. And that's what's going on. You're seeing some of these guys. You look at some of these heavyweights that we've had in recent years. Junior Albini, right? Who's that other guy? Rodrigo. What was his name? The guy, the fat dude I used to make fun of. A whole bunch of fat heavyweights. None of these guys look like professional athletes. They don't look like they train like professional athletes. They certainly don't fight like professional fighters. The quality of these fights has been dismal for so many of these events. Look at that last event last week. Now you tell me that that's the best of the best fighting in there. And it doesn't have to be for every fight night that you're going to get star-studded events. We knew that that was going to happen when the push for having fight events every week or every other week or whatever the case may have been, running at this breakneck pace was going to lead to that. We knew that. And did you expect it to be like this? I mean, come on, man. They are literally scraping the bottom of the barrel with some of these signings. They're just bringing in warm bodies. Oh, you got two knockouts on the regionals. Come on in. You looked impressive. Now what? Now they don't give these guys time to develop. Very few cases of guys actually having this time and space to round out their skill sets before they get catapulted to fights that they don't need to be in. And that's sad.
Yeah, it is. Matt coaches at his gym, and he says that when guys ask him for advice, he doesn't know what to tell them. He said, nowadays, I don't even know what to tell up and coming fighters. They're like, I want to get 4 or 5 fights and then get to the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, I'd be like, don't be a fucking idiot. Now I'm kind of like, yeah, you might be able to do that.
Yeah.
He said, you're also not going to be ready in 4 or 5 fights. Of course, you have those anomalies, the guys that are actually ready, but it's just a different world entirely. Man, he said a mouthful. And
very well said.
On that note, we're going to wrap up this section. Remember, today is free. So coming right up, we have some sumo stomping with Tim Bissell. We are in day 10 of the Haru Bash Show. And y'all are going to be shocked at Tarana Fuji, the current Yokozuna, because boy, oh boy, there's some shakeups. Y'all going to have to listen. All right, we are back with Tim Bissell for some sumo stomping as promised. Tim, how are you today?
I'm okay. I'm a little under the weather. I have a 3-year-old, which means I get sick all the time. So I'm a little sick, but I will be a trooper.
Well, thank you so much for being a trooper. Let's jump right in here. I gotta know, what's going on with Tarana Fuji, and what day of the Harubashu are we on today?
So the bouts which happened most recently were last night in Japan, and that's day 10. So we're going into day 11.
Oh,
so
okay.
And a tournament's 15 days, so we're really into the crunch time now. And Tarana Fuji, he is a spectator. He is not involved now. He pulled out a few days ago. He withdrew due to injury.
Oh, no.
So Tarana Fuji will not be winning this tournament unless, well, even if he comes back, he mathematically can't win enough bouts to win. But it seems unlikely that he'll return again this month. So he's out.
Is it his knees again?
It's hard to say. In sumo, when a Yokozuna is not looking great and are taking a lot of losses, more often than not, they will back out of the tournament altogether and cite an injury. How legit that injury may be or not, we don't know. But it's seen as less embarrassing to stay in there for an entire 15-day tournament and have a really bad record. It's more face-saving to leave after a few days, after you've taken those losses. So then the history books kind of show it as being, oh, he was super injured for that tournament. That's why he took those losses.
So how many did he compete in up to this point, and how many did he win?
So his record as of today is 2 wins, 5 losses, 3 absences. Says,
good Lord, 5 losses?
Yeah, he was not looking great. He came up against a few guys who have really good records against him, and they were able to get those wins over him again. And what was interesting was on day 7, so after he'd taken his 4th loss, he was scheduled to face Tobizaru, who you may remember as the Flying Monkey.
Mm-hmm.
And those two hate each other.
Oh, yeah.
In the last tournament, that's the one where Tobizaru went after Tarana Fuji's knees again, and Tarana Fuji was furious with him and tried to take his head off, and we just really, really hate each other, these two. And so I had a feeling that, given that he was due to go up against Tobizaru on day 7, I had a feeling that he wasn't going to turn up, and that would be when he started this string of absences, because I don't think he would have wanted to go against Tobizaru feeling less than 100%, because I really think he does not want to lose to that guy. And also, when you beat a Yokozuna and you're a lower ranked fighter, you get something called a gold star, which is like a financial bonus, which can really add a lot to your career earnings. So he probably would have liked to have deprived Tobizaru of a chance of getting one of those as well.
Ah, okay. What about Takakesho? How's he doing?
Takakesho is looking, he's not bad. Takakesho is an Ozeki, so he's at 1 rank below Yokozuna. And his record is currently 7-3. So he is in the chasing pack. We have 2 leaders in this tournament right now, 2 very unexpected leaders. And Takakesho is one of those more established names who are kind of chasing those young guys to see if they could possibly challenge him in the last few days of a tournament. But Takakesho's looked good, 7-3. His losses have come against decent guys, not super elite guys, but he's looked quite good in a lot of the bouts he's won. He's looked very powerful and a little tricksy as well, which is what Takakesho is so good at. He's a guy who is extremely forceful, an amazing pusher, but he's not afraid to do things a little sneaky, like a little sidestep here and there. And that kind of makes him a bit of a divisive character, but I like it. I like guys who try to win any ways they can. And for Takakesho being so big and so strong, it's fun to see him also be a little fleet of foot and then try and win things with more sneaky tactics every now and then.
I like him because he's the angry hamster. I will always sure. like him hamster. For that.
Yeah.
When you talk about sneaky things, especially footwork, who would you say right now, maybe just from this tournament, has the best footwork? Because that's what draws my eye most in sumo, is to see these big guys in this tiny little circle. And I'll see one where the one guy has the other guy by his girdle, whatever you call that thing, and he's getting ready to throw him, and the guy in the girdle will put one foot down and spin around, and the next thing you know, it's the other guy going out. And I just love the footwork. So who do you think has the best sneaky footwork?
Well, the most high-ranked guy, because there's only a few real schools of different styles of sumo. Most guys fit quite easily into one of them. And the only guy who really represents that whole fleet of foot school of sumo and is very successful is Abby.
Abby,
who is tall, he is long, and is one of his nicknames is Machine Gun Arm. And his name, Abby itself, is a name which references a many-armed god, because he is known for just spamming, like palm strikes. And he does that. He either gets you out with those, or he draws you in, and he gets you to back him all the way up to the straw boundary, and then he just slips out of the side, and you're left falling on your face out of bounds. That's his go-to move. Every time you face him, you know he's going to do that. He's going to hit you in the face. He's going to draw you in and then be the matador and see if you'll take the bait. And it's a high-risk kind of game he plays. He hasn't been tremendously successful. I think he only has one championship to his name. But he's a guy who no one likes facing him. He's always difficult to fight. And he's known online as kind of a troll of a sumo wrestler. If you're an Abby fan, it's like telling other sumo fans that you just like chaos and you like someone who can turn up and just ruin anyone's day. That's Abby for you.
All right. I like it. What's going on with Onosanto?
He's one of those kids who's leading this thing.
What?
He's one of the surprise stories.
I need to hear about this. What's going on? What's he done that stood out to you?
Well, Onosanto is 8-2. And, he has done a lot of what we saw in the last tournament, where he's just so big, he's so strong, and he just blitzes guys off the opening clash. The opening clash is called the Tachiai, and he is just so quick off the blocks. He's like a sprinter coming out of that crouch, and he will just swallow guys up and push them out in a few seconds flat. That's his thing. And in January, that was his top division debut. He was very good at that, and he was doing that to everyone until he met those big names. He lost to Terunofuji, Fuji, he lost to Kotono Waka, he lost to Hoshoryu, and those elite guys were able to kind of bring him down to earth. And he was promoted a few ranks after that, so immediately in this tournament, he's been fighting tougher opposition from day one, and he's done the same thing. He's overwhelmed, he's been faster, stronger, more athletic than everyone he's faced. His story would be even more impressive this tournament if there wasn't a guy who was doing even better than him with even less experience than him. So Onosanto is currently second with his 8-2 record. Ahead of him is Takeru Fuji, who this is his first ever top division tournament. He's 24 years old, and he is 10-0.
What?
Yeah, he's undefeated, and he is looking excellent and surprising everyone. And if he were to carry on and win this, which is still a very tough thing to do, we've got 5 days left, and only now is Takeru Fuji starting to get those reps against really good guys. But if he were to win this, it would be historic for a guy to come into his first ever top division tournament, be ranked at the very bottom of the rankings in the top division, and win a tournament or win undefeated. So we could have Zenyu show. That would be crazy town. That would be so historic and so amazing. But it's been really fun. And you'll notice his name is very similar to Terreno Fuji.
Mm-hmm.
He's from the same stable as Terreno Fuji, the Isagahama stable, where all those guys have that Fuji name. You have Terreno Fuji, Takeru Fuji, Midori Fuji, yeah. Atama Fuji. They're basically the powerhouse stable of sumo now. They have a lot of guys in the top division. And they have the Yokozuna, of course. So Takeru Fuji, he's been behind closed doors fighting these guys every day. And now he's got his chance to show it in the big show. And he's been amazing.
What's his thing that stands out to you?
Well, he's a little undersized. So it was a little surprising to see him do so well. And he's a guy who, again, is very strong off of a tachi eye, though he doesn't really swallow guys up and overwhelm them and grab their belts and have this huge strength advantage. He has this kind of interesting pressure point style. He's very compact. He like really brings his elbows into his side and really targets the middle of someone's chest. Very textbook, solid fundamental sumo. And he just directs all of his power into a very small space on someone's body and is able to really drive them out. And his feet move so fast, but he can put a lot of momentum into his pushing. But he's also shown that he can do some other things too. He's had some good wins where he's targeted someone's belt and done more of the kind of grappling side of thing. So he's been a very exciting watch. And he hasn't even looked in that much trouble. He's won 10 times, and he has a win over Abby, which was one of his best wins. And most recently, he and Ono Sato were matched together, and he beat Ono Sato last night. And he was able to blast through him, blast through Ono Sato despite being much smaller. And he's the name on everybody's lips right now for this tournament. Can Takeru Fuji keep it going and win this thing, or will he fade away? Because with these tournaments, you start off fighting everyone you're ranked close to. So him being ranked at the lowest possible rank in the top division, which is Megashira 17, he's been going up against guys who are also a little bit experienced, or guys who are too much experience, older guys, vets who are dropping down in the ranking. But around the midpoint of a tournament is when they stop matching based on rankings and they start matching based on records. So at 10-0, he's only going to face other guys who have really good records rest of a tournament. So he's going to be facing your Angry Hamsters and your Hoshu Ryos. He's going to start taking on the elites, and we'll see what he's made of.
We talked briefly about Midori Fuji and that group and that stable that have the Fuji names. How is your favorite doing?
He's struggled a little bit. Midori Fuji is a guy who his margin for errors are so slim because he's so small. He's listed at 5'10". And if he's over 300 pounds, I think that's being generous. So he's going up against guys who are much taller than him, and sometimes guys who are over 400 pounds. So he always has to be kind of perfect to get wins. So you often see his records are like teetering around that Kachikoshi limit, that 8-7 you want to get to get a winning record. Right now he's 5-5. And in the last 2 days, he's kind of figured out what he's doing, I think, and he's had two really good wins. He has a go-to move called a Katasukashi, which is called it's the under shoulder swing down. It's basically you get two hands on one of your opponent's shoulders and you jump back and wrench down as hard as possible and try and get them to touch the clay. And he's won two bouts like that back to back really quickly, including one against Hoshu Ryo, who is an Ozeki and someone who doesn't usually fall for a trick like that. So Midori Fuji, he's 5-5, but he's got some good wins.
Sounds like a swinging net breaker in pro wrestling.
A little bit, yeah. It looks a little bit like that.
Let's talk about Hokuto Fuji. And how's he doing? Also from that stable, correct?
He's not from that stable, despite having that Fuji name. Oh. It's not a hard rule. Okay. It's just you often see these similar names. So he has a Fuji surname. Fuji is just a very popular name with ring names too. It obviously refers to Mount Fuji,
yeah,
which is an incredibly significant cultural and geographical landmark in Japan. And a lot of these names mean what it means in their shikona. The Fuji part is often some kind of quality belonging to Mount Fuji, like Midori Fuji. Midori means green. Fuji means Mount Fuji. So his name has a meaning like if you imagine the greenness of Mount Fuji and how regal and special and lush that is. That's what we're trying to convey with Midori Fuji's name. That's how these names kind of work. Anyway, back to Hokuto Fuji. He's done pretty poorly. He's 2-8 and struggling.
Damn.
I think maybe the injuries maybe plaguing him a bit in this tournament. He looked as if he had that intensity and that eagerness for a lot of these fights, but his body just doesn't seem to be carrying through. And he's had some quite tough losses, and he's at 2-8. He's already banked a losing record, a Makikoshi. So he will be demoted in the next ranking. So he's kind of fighting for pride now. The best he can get this tournament is a 7-8 record, which is still a losing record. So we'll see what he's made of here in the last 5 days and see if he can kind of salvage and save some face by getting some good wins.
How's Double Boob doing?
Double Boob is right there with the leaders here. He's 8-2. So he's one behind Takeru Fuji, tied with Ono Sato, and he's looked great. It's easy to forget that he's also very young. He's only a couple of years older than Ono Sato and Takeru Fuji. He's just been in the top division for a while now, and it's just been very good for a while to get that Ozeki promotion. But he's looked great. He's done his thing, which is combining an incredible amount of size and strength with just really high fight IQ and great grappling. He also does that Katsusukashi move where the under-shoulder swing down. And he's a guy who will do arm lock throws. And he's just as capable of doing a win like that as he is a win where he just goes forward pushing and pushes you straight out. So he's an incredibly diverse arsenal. He's also very good defensively. He's just a very, very smart wrestler. And he's looked great. He's lost to Ura, the Peach Prince. Mm. And he lost to Asanoyama, who both very good wrestlers and nothing to be ashamed of there. And he's a guy who you figure anyone who wants to win this thing, they're going to have to go through him at some point.
Peach Prince, how's he doing?
He's actually had a really interesting tournament. In January, Ura, we call it a Peach Prince because he has a very recognizable baby pink Mawashi belt. And in the last tournament, he was promoted to Komusubi, which was that first and the lowest of those special named ranks. And he really struggled. And he lost to everyone he faced who was in that elite group with him. So much so that I wrote an op-ed about, like, why does Ura have so much trouble against these elite wrestlers? And my conclusion there was Ura, who's known as kind of the Michelle Pahaya of sumo, goes for these really outlandish moves, and he kind of cares more about getting a crazy highlight than he does getting a win. And if you want to watch the sport and have fun, he's a great watch because he's going to cartwheel, he's gonna try an amazing grappling hold, he's going to like almost do like a German suplex on someone if he can. He does all these things you don't see anywhere else in sumo. But this tournament, he's done that stuff. And he's also beaten a few of the really high-ranked guys. He's beaten Hosho Ryo. He's beaten Kirishima. He's beaten Kotana Waka. So he was kind of disproving my thesis on how he struggled against the elites by taking some pretty good wins over them.
Pink Boy beat Double Boob?
He did. He beat him with a beautiful under-shoulder swing down.
Wow! I am stunned! Okay.
Part of that, too, I think, is because this tournament is in Osaka, and Ura, he's from that area, so the crowd are so hot for him. It's been really fun to watch how the crowd just erupts when he does well, and there's lots of pink towels in the crowd waving and banners for him, so he's really been making the crowd happy.
Wow. All right. So let's talk about Hakuoho and the bad vibes that are they continuous at Miyagino, or what's going on over there now?
Yeah, that is bad vibe central.
Uh-oh.
So Miyagino, the rumors are still rife on whether this stable is going to get closed and whether these wrestlers are going to be passed around to different stables. It feels like maybe that, at least from the perspective of observers, people from the outside looking in, it doesn't seem to be much evidence coming out to the contrary, but it kind of feels like we are going to see something quite dramatic happen with Miyagino. And right now, there are wrestlers who are competing under the auspices of a rival stable master. They're struggling. Hakuoho is their highest ranked guy, and he's coming off a shoulder surgery. Before that surgery, he was being held up as the most exciting prospect in all of sumo, perhaps it's ever been. Like, he was so highly hyped up. Like, think of Bo Nickel. This is 100 times more than Bo Nickel. This kid came out of high school and college with the nickname The Monster, and he showed it in his first pro sumo tournaments last year. Just unfortunately, that injury and that surgery took him out for a good like 6 months, and he plummeted in the ranking. So now he's in the second division, trying to get his way up to a top division, and he's only 5-5, which is quite surprising for someone who has such raw ability. Because in Majurio, which is that second division, if you're really good, you should just kind of slice through there. Because the guys who are there, there's a couple of hot prospects, but otherwise it's older guys, or it's guys who this is kind of our ceiling. Except, of course, for a name you've heard before, Waka Takakage is in the second division, and he's the guy leading that, and looking as if he'll be able to get to a top division soon. He as well is coming off a year of injury layoff. But Hakuoho, the bright light from Miyagino, is just looking very mid, as the kids say right now. And I don't know if that's partly of a distraction of all the controversy happening at his stable, or if it's him coming back from his injury. I certainly hope it's not a case of just him being overhyped, because, I mean, I really think he's one to watch for the future, but we'll see. It's just not been a very good month for Hakuoho, not been a very good month for his stable master, Hakuho, and not a very good month for stable Miyagino.
Now, let's go back to Toranofuji Fuji for a moment. Mm-hmm. You know, he's injured again, and we have talked about him just wanting to get to double digits before he retires. That's mm-hmm. looking like it could be soon, right? Because he's very close to that already.
Yes, he has 9 championships.
So
he won in January to get his 9th. So
when he leaves, and if it's looking like it's going to be soon, if you were to look at the entire landscape, who would you put the circle around to be the next Yokozuna?
Well, I thought it would be Kirishima, who was the standout wrestler of last year. I think he won more bouts last year than anybody else. He won 2 championships. He got promoted to Ozeki. He took on his new name, Kirishima, which was his stable master's name. Previously, it was Kiribayama. Kirishima, which means Misty Island, by the way, which is, I think, kind of a cool nickname. But he struggled. He looked terrible in this tournament. He's 3-7, and he's losing to guys who you'd really expect him to beat quite easily. So I don't know if he has an injury, but if all things being equal and everyone was on top of their game, I think Kirishima is the best out of all those Ozeki, personally. But when Toranofuji Fuji goes, it's going to be this really interesting 4-way dance between those Ozeki with Kirishima, Kotanawaka, Double Boob, Takakesho, or Angry Hamster, and Hosho Ryo, which we need a good nickname for. I think his name means Golden Dragon, so that's a pretty good one to remember
that's,
him.
That's a super awesome name right there all by itself. Yeah. I don't know. I'm still partial to Angry Hamster. I should probably go with Double Boob, but I don't know. I like Angry Hamster. He was the first in my heart.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we get more than one Yokozuna. We've had this single Yokozuna for a long time. Previously, you know, it was pretty common to have 2 or 3 at once. So it'd be nice if we can have multiple Yokozuna and get some great Yokozuna battles in the tournaments in the near future.
Ooh, a Yokozuna versus a Yokozuna would be awesome to watch.
Yeah, there's lots of great videos on YouTube where people have done supercuts of all Yokozuna battles between 2 notable Yokozuna. A really good one, if you want to check out, is so Hakuho, the stable master for Miyagino right now, the greatest of all time, 45 championships, every record you can think of. His arch rival was Asasho Ryo, which is Hosho Ryo, our Golden Dragon. That's his uncle.
Oh.
So those two had a great rivalry, and there's lots of great videos of just their battles when they were Yokozuna. And one of the greatest ever sumo bouts is considered to be one of those Hakuo versus Asasho Ryo bouts.
I'll have to check those out. So anything else we should know before next week when you come back to give us the rundown of how it all turned out?
Well, it's going to be an exciting last 5 days here. I mean, I would love it if Takara Fuji could keep it together and make history. That would be the most fun thing. Also, I like Takara Fuji because my daughter's favorite color is purple, so she always roots for the purple guys. And he wears a purple mawashi.
Oh.
It's a very Donatello from Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Purple. So I'm hoping he gets through. You can catch my daily updates on this through my Substack, Sumo Stomp, and the Fight Site, which have been hosting my results coverage. And they're a great crew over there. So keep an eye on it and follow the action, and I'll be here to sum it all up next week.
And there you have it, Tim Bissell from the Sumo Stomp. Make sure you subscribe. And y'all know the drill from here. Until next time, please stay safe.